Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I come to work with two hands every day, and I'm trying to bless somebody.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny, and there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Tuesday, November 1st. Hope you got your fill of candy, all the Halloween fun last night. Shout out to you people out there, because it's time to get back to serious business. And it is the moment every week where we tackle the waiver wire with our very own Viscount of Value, Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, pal?
Things are good. Things are good. I actually looked up the hierarchy of nobility earlier before the pod, just so I knew where this would fall. And it is apparently between an Earl and a Baron. I believe I've already been both an Earl and a Baron. So we'll see. We'll see if I mean, this isn't rock bottom. This is not the floor of the nobility hierarchy. So it's not, I've been better. I've been worse.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you've definitely been worse. You've definitely been better, but that's fine. This is a very moving target. It is not a linear progression upwards for you, but it's also not a linear progression downwards. Okay,
right.
So we're just going to keep it moving. You're still royalty. Okay, we haven't like made you the plebe of the pickups yet. So that, you know, maybe that's like the end of the season when the waiver wire is absolutely bare. But as I said, we have serious business to get into today. Let's jump into the news before we recap Sunday Night Football and do the waivers. Let's start with this note that we got just before this podcast kicked off. John Harbaugh said that Rashad Bateman, who has a foot injury, will miss a few weeks. I think this obviously is a bummer. Bateman's season has been a bit of a bummer because of this foot injury. But this probably, Andy, is probably the right call because clearly, I mean, he got hurt midway through week four. I did the thing which I shouldn't have done, Andy, before we got on here. I was engaging with like, oh, what a disappointing pick this year. It's like, yep, sorry, forgot to plug the injury predictor in. You know, he's been hurt since midway through week four. I can remember the play he got hurt on specifically, and it's been clear he's been out and then back in, probably shouldn't been playing. So this is probably best long term, but it is a bummer for Bateman's season.
This happens every year. I believe that we talked about it with respect to Antonio Gibson last year, with all sorts of injured players. I mean, there's so many people within the fantasy space who will acknowledge that a guy has played through injury and yet still not account for it, like later in the season when they talk about what a disappointment he is. Like, again, Antonio Gibson is probably going to be my favorite example for a while because he literally played on a broken leg. And fantasy managers were like, ugh, he's killing me. I'm just not getting what I thought I would from Gibson, this guy, you know? And it's kind of been the Bateman story too, right? Like, he's obviously been hobbled. It is certainly for the best that he rests for a handful of weeks. And it's hard to, you know, just spinning this forward a little bit, it's hard to separate this from, you know, what will be later in the show, a recommendation to perhaps add Isaiah Likely, who like saved him, saved him in week 8. He was great, right? Like, he was, Andrews checks out, Bateman checks out, Gus Edwards no longer on the field, and they have like one dynamic playmaker, and it's their second tight end. But he just absolutely looked great, carried him, you know, scored a hugely important touchdown. He was an absolute star of the preseason. So normally we don't look to, you know, a down the depth chart tight end when a wide receiver goes out, but, you know, assuming that Baltimore doesn't make a trade, which of course could still happen as we speak, you know, Likely looks like the second most dangerous player on that team in the receiving core anyway, behind Andrews.
Yeah, this podcast feels destined for like a breaking news item before all of this, because the trade deadline obviously is today when you're listening to this, but tomorrow while we're taping this. So something's going to probably happen that will make this, you know, make some of this outdated or whatever. But the Ravens can certainly make a trade. But I like that you brought up Likely. We'll talk about him more later on in the show. But, you know, for the Ravens offense, and I think this obviously trickles down to Lamar Jackson, too, it is just so apparent watching that team that, you know, Isaiah Likely, good fill-in tight end. You know, Devin Duvernay, I think, has looked really good as like a gadgety, create a touch, like speed slot receiver, somewhere in the middle between those two archetypes. But my God, part of the reason that you know, me and so many other folks got excited about Rashad Bateman this year is that they absolutely need a legitimate outside receiver who can beat press coverage, who can win at all levels. And I still think Bateman is that guy when he is healthy. But man, like, if they don't trade for somebody, it's just hard to see this offense firing at all cylinders with a DeMarcus Robinson or Tylan Wallace having to fill in for that role. Yeah. Although Robinson played pretty well against a banged up secondary in Tampa Bay. So Bateman's season has been a bummer. And I still think maybe they should make a move for somebody, even if it's like a, maybe they're the Odell Beckham mercenary team at the end of the season.
Right.
You know, that's certainly a possibility because he can still beat man coverage as well.
And there's, you know, this is not a problem that can be fixed with like a 45-year-old DeSean Jackson either, right?
No,
so if there's any excitement about him, it is that is inappropriate.
I think he could make a difference for the real life Ravens, but certainly not for fantasy.
Yeah.
And like very much on like a super, super small snap count. Just one last thing on this. And again, this is only because I got myself riled up on Twitter, which I, you know, slap myself on the hand. I know better than to do that. But
and you did it right before the pod too. That's amazing.
Stupid rookie mistake. Okay. I shouldn't come in here with Twitter beef. Okay. That is a rookie mistake. But if this season hasn't told you like betting, like, oh, he's never healthy, the betting on that, like betting on predicting injury, if this season of all seasons when Saquon Barkley, the guy who tweeted that to me, by the way, literally had Saquon Barkley in his avatar, which, you know, I'm sorry if you listen, but come on, like for real. You know, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, all these dudes, like if that hasn't told you that's the worst bet you can make, I don't know what to tell you, but we should move on. We should definitely move on from my Twitter beefs. I'm not trying to do that on this show. Speaking of injuries, though, NFL Network's Ian Rapoport reports that Cooper Kupp is day-to-day after suffering a sprained ankle in Week 8 against the San Francisco 49ers. Good news, Andy, because my God, we do not need to be losing Cooper Kupp out here.
Right. How about it? Kupp himself said, I believe, that he dodged a bullet, which is a really good thing. Obviously was able to walk off. So there's no, he's also one of these, you know, he took a handful of questions this week on Twitter, asking for my thoughts on how to replace Ja'Marr Chase. And like, the answer is you can't replace some of these guys. Mm-hmm. You get like, unless you're going to blow up the roster and trade for, I don't know, Stephon Diggs or Justin Jefferson. Like there's a certain level of player that you just can't, you know, if they sit, you're just going to score a little bit less, right? Like there's no direct replacement for him. Kupp is such a player, you know, the highest floor at his position and probably the highest ceiling as well. So good, very good news here. Certainly good news for the Rams. Good news for anybody who's tied to Kupp.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think the Rams receivers are actually probably, they're going to get a lot of attention because, you know, it just is what it is. But I feel like their receiver core is actually one of the least of their problems offensively right now. As long as Cooper Kupp is healthy, certainly. Like, I think Ben Skoranek is a decent fill-in player. It's nice to have Van Jefferson back, even if he didn't, you know, do anything in the box score. And I think Robinson is kind of, like Scott said it perfectly yesterday, that now, like, a 5-for-54 game is like, wow, that was a really encouraging sign for Allen Robinson. But, like, he's playing better. He's integrated in the offense, whatever. But they've got so many other problems that go beyond the receiver core that they certainly cannot afford a Cooper Kupp absence. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. Obviously, it's just because we haven't talked about Kadarius Toney, and, you know, this is like a passing news line, whatever. But Chiefs head coach Andy Reid said, quote, "It will be a gradual process," when asked about working Kadarius Toney into the offense. I talked about this with Frank Schwab. I talked about this with Scott on the preview podcast last week. The news broke before that show, but I'm curious what your thoughts and expectations are for Kadarius Toney the rest of the way.
I was really surprised to see, you know, like he's not even eligible for conversation in the waiver wire show, right? Like we can't even talk about him because he vaulted from, I don't know what it was, like 15% rostered, 20%
like
rostered.
50 something, yeah.
And then exploded with like something like 400,000 ads, 400,000 plus ads, like the day that the trade happened. And I get it in that his best moments last season were, we didn't see it from very many other players. Like he moved differently. He was absolutely electric on the field for the Giants, has clearly not been available to them. Among the issues with Kadarius Toney, though, like Brian Daboll didn't even want to play him. Like a really good head coach that we all respect, great play caller, all that, did not want to play Kadarius Toney. Didn't necessarily want him on the roster at the start of the season. So my expectations are very low. And I was just, I get it. He's a great athlete and all that. And it's the Chiefs and we really like the Chiefs. But there are some pretty dynamic players, some guys that we'll talk about in the show. There are some pretty dynamic receivers that are already on that team, that are well integrated into the offense, that have well-established roles that we are not as enthusiastic about as we are with Tony, who clearly is going to need some time to ramp up, right? Like, hasn't been practicing, the severity of whatever injuries he's had, notwithstanding, like, he has not been practicing. And now he's got a new playbook to learn. He's got new everything. It's a great situation. But the idea that Kadarius Toney, they're just going to have this package of plays for him and he's going to erupt, you know, at any point in November, seems like, I don't know, it's kind of wishful thinking to me. There are still some very good players in this offense, and Patrick Mahomes more or less knows where they're going to be.
Yeah, I think there is a lot to unpack. And, you know, people talk about, like, he's had one good game. And, you know, if anybody's going to tell you that a receiver should not be just defined by the box score, I'm going to be that guy, right? I will literally tell you that, but for so many players. But I mean, I think Kadarius Toney literally has had one good game. Like that game against the Cowboys, like I'm talking stringing from start to finish, consistently playing extremely well throughout. It was that one game, and it was about as bright as you could shine, but there's still a lot of holes from the player there too. Like, I think because fantasy Twitter just has a misconstrued idea about who this player is. And I was in on drafting Tony before all the injuries and stuff this year, because like he should have moonwalked into, which is a little strange that he didn't, but should have moonwalked into a wide receiver one role for this team. And offense, it has been very good. But I just think like we're acting as if they traded for an already established starting player. And Tony is not that. He's a talented player. But like we're going to talk about these other guys on the roster, you know, they've got MVS who's, you know, whatever, Mecole Hardman, who's whatever, Juju, who is good, but I think probably a wide receiver two at best. But those guys have all played decently well within the construct of an offense that's played really well. So I agree with you. Like, I don't know, they're just going to be parting the seas for Tony to get in there.
Yeah, it's a completely reasonable flyer for Kansas City to take. I get it, but they can certainly afford to take their time developing a player who clearly needs to be developed. It is just not a plug and play situation, which is, you know, normally when you see a guy added at the rate that he was added, you'd like to think that he's somebody that you can actually use sometime soon. And I just don't see that necessarily on the horizon.
Yeah, we could be talking about him as a guy that we are telling you to drop like in the next.
Right.
Yeah, in the next like 3 weeks or something like that.
I was gonna pre-write a Kadarius Toney blurb when this trade happened, because I thought, oh, well, this is interesting. And maybe by December he'll be a thing. and then like within 90 minutes, his roster percentage was like 55 or 60 like, or something like that. And he was, had to scrap that.
It's almost the other end. Very, very interesting there. We did get a Ravens trade in the middle of the podcast, Andy. Roquan Smith traded to the Ravens. Bears have traded Roquan Smith to the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I accept that the Bears are acknowledging that they are not a particularly competitive team. you know, despite some regrettable early wins, I get it. I totally get it. I love Roquan though. I don't know how much like Quinn had left necessarily, but I really like Roquan. So that's a blow. The Bears' already bad defense gets a little bit worse.
Yeah, it's a shame because he's a good player, but I understand like what the deal is. I don't see the trade compensation or anything just yet, but was looking for a Ravens trade. Everybody on fantasy Twitter is like, Brandon Cooks, let's get him to Baltimore. And again, maybe he is by the time we finish with this podcast, but for now, it's a very Ravens thing. Like, oh man, they're down bad at wide receiver. Let's get a middle linebacker in here. Yes, okay, that's what we really need. Very, very Ravens thing to do. All right, next thing up and last thing up here. You know, we could be quick on this because who cares? Apparently, Irv Smith suffered a high ankle sprain in the Week 8 win over the Arizona Cardinals. Irv Smith week was not great. Like, you know, there feels like there's one Irv Smith week on fantasy Twitter. And I get it. It was the Cardinals, but you know, Johnny Munn. Yeah. Former Rams tight end, now with Kevin O'Connell there in Minnesota, he catches a tight end and Irv Smith suffers a high ankle sprain. One reason I wanted to talk about this is because people are obviously always hurting for tight end, but also like it feels like the Vikings are a sneaky team that could add a little bit of something at some point this year, because I think their offense has been good, but like just a little more meat on the bone than I would like.
Yeah, no question. They are probably going to be a disappointment if you're a Vikings fan and they don't go out and patch some holes, because they are extremely competitive right now. Obviously, this is a loss, but obviously not a catastrophic loss. And Irv Smith in fantasy terms is just this sort of tight end that if he gets, like, I hate to say it, but if he gets hurt, you just move on, because there are a bunch of guys sort of in the Irv Smith bin of touchdown dependency, right? Like, that's just, I don't know. We've got some names at tight end, and I feel like some guys have pretty clearly emerged over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely. There's a little bit of something there. All right, let's recap Sunday Night Football. Bills 27, Packers 17. You know, it's funny with Buffalo, man, from probably quarter one to quarter two is like, oh boy, they're just going to blow the doors off this Packers team. And then it's like, almost felt like they were just experimenting in the second half with like, oh, can we get away with this? Some just bad plays by Josh Allen that ended up in interceptions. And long story short, though, they still win by double digits against a Packers team that has Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, they win by double digits in as sloppy a game as they have played, right? Not much was impressive on the Buffalo side, and it still felt like they cruised. And that says a lot about where the Packers are at. Certainly says something about where the Bills are at. Fantasy takeaways from this thing. The first thing that comes to mind, and maybe this is not like at the front of everybody's mind, but if you play in deep leagues, it is. Any Khalil Shakir takeover that you might have planned on did not happen. He basically played his normal snaps, just barely on the field. Isaiah McKenzie was out there for a little bit over 50% of the snaps, I think. Not like he wasn't super heavily involved, but did find the end zone. But the Shakir thing that, you know, I'd made a handful of speculative ads in a couple of places because McKenzie was so bad before Buffalo's bye. And it didn't matter. He still did the usual Isaiah McKenzie thing.
Yeah, route on 53.3% of the dropbacks for Isaiah McKenzie, 36.7 for Khalil Shakir. That is probably not switching up. And I mean, it was the usual Isaiah McKenzie thing. There was the one like play where, you know, he ran backwards. It's like, oh man, this is not a kick return. This is an offensive play. Okay. So he's still a little
bit
of a
frustrating
player.
That sort
of
thing is really exciting when like Tyreek Hill does it, right? Cause he does it almost every time he touches the football. He takes like two quick steps back, but it is a really bad idea for almost anyone else.
100%. Yeah. Not a great idea. You know, on the Bills side of things elsewhere, Stefon Diggs just, I mean, so good. Like this connection has now like launched itself to its graduate level, like they're, or maybe even they're in the doctorate level now, where they've always been great, but now these two are just so psychotically on the same page where they're just two peak talents like intersecting right at the height of their powers, and it's beautiful to see. So that's great. You know, Stefon Diggs is awesome. I love to celebrate Stefon Diggs' awesomeness, so I'm going to take any chance I can, and I just took that chance right now. Gabe Davis, though, had, like, his bottom game, you know, two catches, 30-plus yards, whatever. Those are going to happen, okay? Like, you have to live with that, I guess, with Gabe Davis.
And had a near touchdown, like, had an opportunity at the back of the end zone with a ball that he didn't pull in with his feet inbounds, but it was, like, inches away, right? So you still had the deep shots. You still had the normal Gabe Davis usage. So that was a pretty typical, like that is definitely within the range of outcomes for Gabe Davis. And you spoke about this in the preseason because everybody focused on, you know, the monster playoff performance that he had against Kansas City, the four touchdowns, the 200 yards. But like his final game of the regular season was also a zillion targets. Was it like 30 yards, two catches, something like that, right? Like, He is a wide range of outcomes player. And some of that is just the nature of the targets that he sees, right? A lot of downfield stuff, a lot of intermediate stuff. It's not, you know, he doesn't get a lot of layups.
No, yeah, definitely not. It's just, that's the player he is. That's where he wins, is down the field. Like, he's not going to be doing all like the curls and the comebacks and stuff like that. But they did get him a little bit more like some opportunities in the open field, which is nice to see. Cause I do think like big guy like that run after the catch, that's nice. Packers side of it, it was unsurprising, but still striking to see them like running the Arthur Smith offense in the third quarter at times, where it's like, man, they're trying to punch their way back into their game, and they are trying to do it with Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon. Again, not surprising considering this is a bad receiver core and is now banged up. But my God, man, I mean, it was a little striking to see, but good game from Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon. I mean, he didn't do much for you in fantasy, but it was like, all right, he played well at least.
Yeah, it was much better usage off of, what was it, like a four-touch game previously. So better use. I mean, their two best skill players right now are Jones and Dillon. And I don't like, and I think that's the end of the tier. And then there's a drop down to whatever you consider Romeo Doubs, right? Like that maybe receiving core is just bad. I mean, it's just bad. Like they're throwing a Romeo Doubs and they're trotting out Sammy Watkins and Bob Tonyan is getting his usual 30 some yards. It's real. They don't have answers. They are another team who, by the time this podcast actually drops, maybe they will have finally dealt for a receiver. They've certainly had opportunities over the last couple of years while still needing to find answers at the position. They haven't done it. So I guess at this point, I would be surprised if they made a splashy move for a receiver. Because they've absolutely known that it's been an issue for a long time.
Yeah, that struck me at the end of the game. A couple of things that Collinsworth and Tirico kind of kept harping on. One was like, oh, Sammy Watkins has just not gotten open in this game. It's like, yeah, Sammy Watkins hasn't gotten open since about 2015. Like, at least consistently. Like, he's had big games and stuff like that, but he's been one of the most inconsistent route runners in the NFL since his big 2015 season. That was about it. But that's the Sammy Watkins show. And like, it kind of was annoying me a little bit that the commentators kept saying like, oh man, Rodgers just like having to feed these guys the plays and the 2 minute drill. Like they haven't spent a lot of time together. It's like, but they planned on walking into this season with Sammy Watkins and Romeo Doubs as their primary outside receivers. Like I know that Randall Cobb is hurt. I know that Alan Lazard is hurt. But you know, and this guy, Samari Toure, who, he's caught one pass before this, and it was like, wow, this is the first guy that's been on the same page with Rodgers when he like freelance, like improvs in the pocket and stuff like that. That's a little bit concerning, but yeah, it's just, this is the group, this is the bet they made, and like I kind of feel like they're just going to end up lying in it.
Yeah, I mean, Sammy Watkins has been in the league since 2014. He's been in the league forever, right? So like there shouldn't, I don't know, Sammy Watkins should know where to be on a football field. He's just he's cooked. I don't have another word for him. He should not be in anyone's fantasy plans. I thought the Doubs catch for a touchdown was fantastic. It was a great, great play. Not a lot of separation on it, right? Like he doesn't seem to be an elite separator at all. But it was a great play. It was a great, you know, you want to talk about body control, you want to talk about good hands. Like it was really nice. Like that kid has promise. I wouldn't give up on Christian Watson, but really unfortunate injury there. Hasn't been able to stay healthy this season. But we're in November now, and it's pretty clearly not going to really happen for Christian Watson this season. So if they don't make a move, I mean, they're throwing to the running backs and they're throwing to Doubs.
Yeah, Doubs still ran a route on 90.9% of his dropbacks, despite everybody kind of thinking he was going to be the guy that Aaron Rodgers is talking about on the McAfee show, like needs to get his reps cut, stuff like that. And then he was also lined up in the slot or on 50% of his snaps. Like that was encouraging to see, because I agree with you. He's not he probably should not be a legit X receiver because he's not really that like separation based guy. But ain't nobody else on this roster going to be the X receiver. I mean, Amari Rodgers, who, man, that guy has been a big, big disappointment. If you had any hopes for him coming into the league, and he was like primarily outside receiver. So it's like, yeah, let's get our best guy, which unfortunately is a fourth round rookie in Romeo Doubs. Like, let's get him some slot snaps and stuff like that. So I think he's still like, I'm sure he got dropped a lot like last week and stuff. He's probably somebody, we'll talk about him later in the wide receiver section, so I won't go too much farther into that. But yeah, he's definitely still on the radar and the only like consistent player in this offense. But man, I mean, it's just striking watching the Packers offense in this current form, because it's just such a disaster. And we haven't even mentioned the pass protection, right? Which is, you know, probably far and away their biggest problem. Yeah. Like these receivers are one thing, but this pass protection unit, that's a huge issue.
And we've seen Aaron Rodgers overcome that in the past, but he's always overcome it with, you know, veteran, dependable receivers that he is completely, you know, mind meld with, right?
And, one of which happened to be the best player at the position. Like, it's, yes. It's always worth coming back to that. Like,
I feel like, you know, and this is something that I brought up after the Packers win early in the season over the Bears. It, like, even in that moment, and they were, you know, things were going very well for Green Bay then, and they hadn't rattled off all these losses. I thought that was, if I'd been a Packers fan, I would not have been enthusiastic coming out of that game, because the previous Bears game, you know, the prior season last year, they could have just picked their number. There was nothing the Bears could do with Devontae. I think the Packers ended up with 40 something in that game, but the offense that beat them early in the season, you know, again, the Packers depending on the run quite a bit, the Bears running, you know, Bears had given up in that game and were just running the ball like throughout the entire second half. And the Packers didn't really separate. This is just the least dynamic pass offense. Like, maybe not, you know, it's not quite in the category of like the Bears and Atlanta, but it's not far from it either.
Yeah. It's getting a little too close for comfort. That is for sure. You have any just last thing before we go to the waivers and non-fantasy related? Do you have any hope that the Packers can win the NFC North now with the gap that the Vikings have put on this division?
No, not really. I mean, it would take a series of catastrophic injuries. I would. I mean, if you're a Vikings fan, you're probably like, you know, full of
knocking on wood
all the time. Yeah, you're not exactly, you know, you're not overconfident where Aaron Rodgers is concerned, I'm sure. But no, I think there's enough separation there, and I think the Vikings have proven enough that it should be their division, unless something happens with Cousins, unless something happens with Jeff or so. Like, it's going to take maybe even multiple injuries to change the tide there.
Absolutely. All right. Andy and I are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will run through the week 9 waiver ads. All right, Andy, we're back. Let's get started with running back here. A lot of interesting options, and we're sort of moving towards, I know this is a big bye week, but we are sort of kind of moving towards stash season.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a great point. I am surprised that Alexander Mattison is still available to be discussed here. I'm surprised that he is still available in over 50% of Yahoo leagues. He's sitting out there around 45% rostered right now. And like, there's nothing that I really even need to say here, because we've already experienced what it looks like when Alexander Mattison takes over a full workload, and it's great, right? Like, he can be an RB1. And there's really no reason for it. And we know that if anything were to happen to Dalvin Cook, that Madison would basically just be plugged into roughly Cook's touches. He's not exactly Dalvin Cook, but he's close enough that somebody in, honestly, I even think a 10-team league should be stashing him right now. I can't believe that there's not like one of 10 teams that can use a lottery ticket like that. And he's about as good a lottery ticket as there is at the position. So Madison is somebody who I totally understand why he dipped down into the 40s in terms of roster percentage during the Vikings bye week. I get it. You can't stash everybody, but like, this is one of the prime stashes. And he should absolutely be rostered. So for me, he's almost a separate category of player. The nice thing about him is he's got a little bit of standalone value too. Like in a week like this, where we've got 6 teams on bye, you can flex somebody like Madison. He's not getting a ton of touches, but he found the end zone this past week. Good player, doesn't need a lot of touches to have a chance to hit pay dirt. So Madison is probably somebody that I would put separate and apart from the rest of these guys. I guess another player on the list that right now looks like a stash, and who knows, maybe the Rams make a deal for a running back, and by the time you're listening to this pod, we have a totally different spin on the Rams backfield. But Kyren Williams, still out there in about 55% of Yahoo leagues. The Rams have somehow already reached the point in their season where they're ready to move on from Daryl Henderson. This is an annual tradition. And they've done it, clearly, because Henderson, you know, season low in terms of snap percentage, was running behind Ronnie Rivers on Sunday, who did very little of note. He was a 5-year player at Fresno State. Really nice college career, but nothing that jumps off the page. I didn't think there was
anything. Ronnie Rivers sounds like a lead singer in like a right? Southern rock band. You know, I mean, come on.
R.I.P. Ronnie Rivers. Can't believe he died in that plane crash back in 79. That was really, the end of that band. Yeah. So like the Rams are already like just sort of trying out dudes. And again, perhaps they'll address the backfield via trade. But if they don't, Kyren Williams, a guy who suffered a high ankle injury in week one and has been on IR, has been designated to return. Now, like the injury could bother him all year. We just don't know. Mm-hmm. He did require surgery. It's not normally the kind of injury where you're like, okay, it's been 4 weeks. He should be great now. Maybe there will be a lingering problem. He's not like Isaiah Pacheco in terms of combine measurements either, right? Like he was a 4.6 guy. Nothing extraordinary in terms of physical traits, but such a good football player at Notre Dame. Made people miss and extracted himself from situations that you did not think he could possibly get out of. He was very good against some of the best defenses that they faced, right? Had a big game against Alabama. He's a good player and a really capable receiver. 77 catches over his final two seasons. Just a very good football player. And he should fall into a bunch of touches, again, if the Rams don't make a move at running back.
It is a little striking that, like, the guys that are supposed, like, the cavalry that's coming, the reinforcements to save the Rams are, like, Van Jefferson, who's a good player, yeah, but, like, a number three receiver. Kyren Williams, who, you know, might be a good back, but is a six-round rookie. This guy, Alaric Jackson, who they were really trying to push as like the future at left tackle through the media this week after they really tried to push Joe Noteboom, the guy he was replacing as the future and wasn't good as the future left tackle. Alaric Jackson's like an undrafted free agent. Not in the CFL draft, though. He was drafted in the CFL draft, but is an undrafted NFL free agent. So like the Rams are in that point. Like this is the bargain. They're in the bargaining phase of like, oh man, like we could still be in our window. We could still find some things. We just need Kyren Williams to come and save us. We just need Lark Jackson to be the future at left tackle. It's like, well, this is what happens when you give up all your draft picks and you make some bad investments like along the way.
Right.
This is where we're at.
Right. I was also really surprised at how many people added Van Jefferson. Like I thought he was an interesting flyer, but like there's no path to Van Jefferson being, you know, he can have big spike weeks, right? And if the Rams were right now the sort of offense that like the Chiefs are and they were scoring 30 a game, yeah, we'd feel pretty good about a high variance receiver tied to the Rams. But that is not what they are right now. So the likelihood of Van Jefferson giving us like a 2-touchdown game with 120 yards or whatever, and yeah, that's the kind of guy that you just want to stick at wide receiver three. Like that's probably not going to happen. And there were really a lot of ads for him. I'm sure he's going to be a drop last week coming off the zero. But, good player. Doesn't really change the outlook for Van Jefferson, but certainly not a number one or a number two.
No. You have Kenyon Drake on this list. Gus Edwards is day-to-day with his hamstring injury. Obviously, we know J.K. Dobbins is on IR as well.
Yeah. You know, I don't even know what to say about Kenyon Drake being like, the 3 weeks ago, really good. And then when we actually hyped him, when we were like, yeah, you probably want to add Kenyon Drake, just an absolute zero. And Gus Edwards blew up. And then, of course, on Thursday night, Kenyon Drake has a day, finds the end zone. Pretty good effort from him in the game in which Gus Edwards picked up a hamstring injury. So it's not terrible news on Edwards. The other thing about Baltimore is, they've got a game coming up this week and then a bye. So like Gus Edwards is going to have a long time to get better because they got the mini bye from the Thursday game, right? And then you figure he doesn't play in week 9 and then they have a bye week and then Gus is going to be fine. So Kenyon Drake is basically like a 1 week. You can use him at New Orleans. New Orleans is obviously not quite the defense that we thought they would be this year. So I think he's a good play this week. He's not going to have the backfield to himself. Justice Hill has looked pretty good at times, right? But and then again, Gus Edwards comes back. So Drake is sort of a 1 week placeholder for you. Other guys on the list, I mentioned Pacheco already. I don't have a ton of enthusiasm for him because he's a guy who's in a three-headed committee, which we absolutely hate, right? We need a, even in an offense like Kansas City's, we generally need a committee to get down to like two guys before we can actually start him. But it was meaningful that he was playing a little bit more. And so he's almost more of a stash for me than he is somebody that you can actually flex. Latavius Murray is certainly worth a look, but Denver going into their bye, so he can't help you this week. But he did out-touch Melvin Gordon 15-12. They both score touchdowns, so no worries there. But, you know, Melvin is just barely clinging to fantasy value. It's not like Murray is like a passes-the-eye-test guy necessarily, but man, coaches really like him. And he is falling into an awful lot of touches. We talk about Rashad White all the time. He's a really good stash. We've justified this a million times before. He's playing a little bit. So if you really needed to, you could flex him and hope. But the potential payoff with Rashad White is that if anything were to happen to Leonard Fournette, Rashad White is a very playable potential RB1. And then the other name that I included in the rundown here was James Cook, only because, well, number one, good game against the Packers.
Yeah.
It had a lot to do with one catch, right? He had a 41-yard reception, but goes over 70 total yards in the game, 6 touches. I thought it was notable that he was playing late in the game. Like when it was sort of salt the game away time, they did have James Cook on the field a little bit. It's not like he played a ton of snaps or anything. It was still in the teens. But he was on the field in meaningful moments and he made plays, and that was good to see.
Yeah, 17 air yards per target for old James Cook there. 24 yards after the catch per reception. I mean, it was interesting. Obviously, it was interesting with the whole James Cook thing, because I had him on the getting in early segment last week because Zach Moss was a healthy scratch in that Kansas City game. And I do think like he's iced out Moss as the number two back here. Now, if anything was to happen to Devin Singletary, I think it would be a two-man committee between James Cook and Zach Moss. But at this point, I'd imagine that James Cook would get the 1A in that rotation, or maybe just the pure one. And then, you know, Zach Moss spells in a little bit, but I don't know. James Cook looks like he's running a little bit better too. He looks like he's a little bit more of like a confident. I mean, I'll never forget like that first game against the Rams. It was like, oh boy. Oh man. Like I don't, that's not great, but
total rookie, you know, deer in headlights game. Yeah.
Total like, rookie deer in headlights.
Yeah, yeah. He's pretty clearly adjusted to the speed of things, wrapped his head around the playbook maybe. But he looked great. Like he looked really good. Limited action. Not somebody that you can necessarily stick in a lineup quite yet, but I agree with you. Yeah. I think it would be Cook and Moss, if anything were to happen to Singletary. The other thing there is that I don't think Buffalo ever necessarily sees James Cook as like a full workload guy. Like I'm not sure they originally saw Devin Singletary that way either. So it's entirely possible that he could play his way into that. But just the way they spoke about him, like at the introductory press conference after he was drafted, immediately they spoke of him as like a third down. Hey, we want to throw to this guy. You know, we think down the road we'll be throwing to this guy like 60 times a year. But it wasn't, you know, I never had the read that they intended to give him 250 or 300 touches.
No, definitely not. But you know, the main reason they drafted him was they wanted him to catch passes. Like that's why the weirdest feud in NFL history, the JD McKissick contract feud, happened between Brandon Bean and like the Washington Commanders front office or whatever. But they wanted that to be a part of the offense. And Josh Allen is throwing to running backs at a higher rate this year than ever before. So if Devin Singletary is hurt, James Cook becomes that guy. So yeah, I think he does make a sense. Like, but again, he's a stash. He's not a guy that you could play really. Like, if you have to play James Cook, your team's in a little bit of trouble at this point right now. Yeah. Unless there's a Devin Singletary injury. Let's move on to wide receivers, headlined by the great Rondale Moore. People are already in my Discord like, we need an update on Rondale Moore. You know, how's he looking from a route perspective? No, he looks the exact same. Okay. I already did that this year. He's gonna look the exact same. He just is like, they didn't play him outside last week, okay, against Minnesota.
Yeah.
He was like a 50%+ slot guy, and he has to do that, okay? He's not a real wide receiver. I mean, he's a little bit more of a real slot receiver this year than he was last year. Last year, he's a pure fake receiver. But now, at least, he's like, you can't throw him out there on the perimeter, but you could play him in the slot and have him do a few things.
Yeah, well, he's like a teacup version of a receiver, right? He's 5'7". This is not a large human being. He is not an outside receiver. You're quite right about that. But he's also not, like, last year, average depth of target was like a yard. And this year it is, you know, it's not spectacular, but it is a more slot receiver-ish, like 5 to 6 yards per target, which is totally acceptable. Guy's coming off, like, the other thing about him is he almost never comes off the field for Arizona. Played 30, I think it was 31 slot snaps this past week. Caught 7 balls on 8 targets, 90 plus yards. Had a highlight touchdown that I don't know. I'm going to have to rewatch it a few times. I'm not sure how much of it was just three bumbling Vikings defenders running into each other and how much of it was Rondell Moore. I'm not totally sure. But I mean, he's a really good player. And again, he's played at least like 86% of the snaps in every game. So he doesn't come off the field a lot. And Arizona finds themselves behind a lot. So there's going to be plenty of balls in the air, plenty of volume. And I think like, not this is obviously not a perfect player, but any sort of PPR, I think Rondell Moore is going to see a bunch of targets rest of season. I like this whole list that I put together here because it's...
Hey, would you, before we move on though, would you like to guess his air yards per target from week 8, Rondell Moore in this big breakout game?
Oh no. I'm going to guess was it like 4.5 or something like that?
1.3.
Okay. It's not ideal. That is actually exactly like last year. I don't know what Zadot was last year. It was like 1.4 or 1.2, something like that. Yeah.
I think it was just a pure one or something like that. But yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, there we are. But yeah, Robbie Anderson,
like,
exactly,
I don't know. Take it up with the people who came up with PPR as a legitimate scoring system. That wasn't me.
Don't want. Yeah. Well, we also, you can tweet at Andy about that. I'm not interested in like the PPR debates
PPR wars. Yeah. The scoring settings discussion.
I could not care less. I would rather talk about position eligibility than the history of PPR or why we did it or what we need. I mean, every offseason it feels like somebody comes up with some, and I'm laser focusing on like some friends of mine too. I mean, I know James Coe had like a whole thing about how to fix quarterback scoring. I'm like, geez, dude, go outside, bro. Like, I mean, come on, you're one of my closest friends. Like, but come on, man. I mean, every offseason feels like somebody's like, here's how we fix fantasy scoring to make it like real life. It's not real football, okay? It's fantasy football. The players that are good in fantasy aren't always good in real life and vice versa. That's, I mean, my God.
Oh, yeah, I feel like I've written a lot of the same stuff that James Coe has over the years. I do have
laser
opinions.
At one of my friends. I was like, I'm coming back at you, pal.
I have feelings about quarterback scoring. We don't have to go into it right now, but that's more of an off-season topic, but I definitely have feelings on that subject. I think Coe and I are in sync there.
Oh, well, you two can, you know, build a fort inside. You know, blankets, pillows, the whole thing.
Little
you
pillow
talk
fort.
About that.
Sure.
A little pillow fort. Yeah, you could do that.
James Coe actually seems like just a perfect person to build a pillow fort with. I'd be happy to do it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I endorse James Coe as a pillow fort builder for sure. He's just not going to be there on time. That's the one thing. Expect to start 15 minutes late. And I love you, James, but... expect to start 15 minutes late, and you know it, so that's that. Before we go on a tangent about which fantasy writers we'd want to build a pillow fort with, although that would make a hell of a podcast, talk to you about the rest of the receivers on this list.
I wouldn't want to do it with Rebar. He's a big guy. You'd be knocking over pillows. He seems a little clumsy. You wanted to talk about receivers.
No. Well, you know. Whichever way you want to go, Andy. I got
a bunch of guys on this list that I don't think they're Harmon favorites, and they're not necessarily Barron's favorites either, but they're probably coming into a bunch of targets. And I guess I'll start with Josh Palmer, right? He's got a terrific matchup coming up against Atlanta. Atlanta has been the most generous defense to opposing wideouts. It's just a really poor pass defense. I mean, you guys saw how regulation ended against the Panthers. Like, it is a vulnerable pass defense. So
they gave it up to one of your other guys on the list who's not very good at football either.
Yes, right. Absolutely terrific setup for Palmer. No Mike Williams. He's dealing with a high ankle sprain. So bunch of targets available. We assume Palmer is finally back from the concussion. In his previous, you know, the last time we saw Palmer on the field, he drew 12 targets. These are Justin Herbert targets. They're pretty good targets, and it's a fantastic matchup. I don't think he can screw this up. Maybe he screws it up, but I don't think he can screw this up. It's a great situation for him. So I think Palmer's a priority at the position. I think, you know, they're flawed players, but I think Rondell Moore and Josh Palmer are probably the priorities here. If you are in a league where Romeo Doubs was dropped, he's got, and that's an awful lot of leagues. He's available in about 55% of Yahoo leagues as we speak. He's got Detroit coming up, and that is obviously an excellent matchup as well. He's probably the best thing the Packers have in the receiving core right now, at least until Alan Lazard comes back or they make a deal. Again, 62 yards and a touchdown against Buffalo. The touchdown was really of the highest quality. So I think Doubs is interesting in a wide receiver 3-ish, flex-ish sort of way. And then I want to mention the pair of Chiefs that we sort of teased earlier when talking about Kadarius Toney. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is out there for most of you. And he was, you could tell that there were an awful lot of people who were adding Kadarius Toney and probably dropping MVS. And and maybe that's fine if you're just taking a flyer for late in the season. But I can almost guarantee that in the same way that we just saw Mecole Hardman blow up, you know, before the Chiefs bye, there's a couple of blow up spots coming for MVS. I don't know when it's going to be, but he's got some friendly matchups ahead. He's got Tennessee and then he's got Jacksonville. The guy's third on the Chiefs in targets right now. I think he's seen 38 targets on the season. His ADOT is over 12 yards. So he's seeing like deeper downfield, sort of high yield opportunities. We like that. And the damn team is scoring 32 points a game. So there's a lot of opportunity here. Like his quarterback is Patrick Mahomes. He's seeing a bunch of targets and they're downfield targets. So like, that is an example of somebody that I would rather have on a roster than Kadarius Toney right now. I think there are definitely some blow-up spots coming. Mecole Hardman, by the way, the guy who just had the multi-touchdown game, is also widely available in Yahoo. And I think maybe this is weird because Mecole Hardman has actually scored touchdowns this season, unlike MVS. But I think I would probably rather have MVS based on the quality of the looks that they're seeing and what they're actually doing for the team right now. Like, I just think there's a couple of, like, MVS is going to finish the season with like 5 touchdowns, 6 touchdowns, something like that. I'd be surprised if he didn't. So there are big weeks coming up from him. You sort of teased Terrace Marshall. This is not an endorsement of Terrace Marshall as a real life football player. But last couple games, he's played over 80% of the snaps and he's coming off a game in which he was targeted 9 times. And yeah, it was Atlanta. And so things are always going to look a little bit better when you're facing the Falcons. But, you know, there's a lot of targets and a lot of usage. Other than that, I sort of disavow this pickup. But some of you are in pretty deep leagues where Marshall is definitely available and he's interesting. Like, I don't know, I'm in a 20-team league. I'm in a few 16-team leagues and Marshall is of interest to me there. Last name I'll throw out is Garrett Wilson because he dipped below the 50% threshold, understandably. Because times have been a little lean. Times have been rough since Zach Wilson took the reins. They're still rough, I think. Even though he's coming off 115 receiving yards, that was good to see. He's a very good player. That's the end of the hype here, because I think Zach Wilson is kind of a big mess right now. Right? Like, and they've got Buffalo coming up. It's not a great matchup, but then they got a bye on the back end of that. So I don't know that I'll actually be looking to plug Garrett Wilson into any lineups, but man, he's good. A different quarterback could really turn him into a thing.
100% true. Yeah, he's really good. And I mean, it's just the Zach Wilson thing. Terrace Marshall, just to circle back on that, the one thing I think that is different between this year and last year is, I mean, there's a lot, right? From an infrastructure standpoint, there's no more Matt Rhule, but Terrace Marshall is playing on the outside 87.3% of his snaps. They sort of kind of wanted to make him a big slot receiver last year.
Yeah.
And he can't do that because he can't really separate. He's not a good route runner. I mean, he has some of the worst reception perception scores against man and zone and press coverage and all the coverages from his rookie season. But the thing coming into the NFL is like, he wasn't a complete good route runner either, but it's like you could get him to run slants and goes and throw it up to him in contested situations on the outside. But you're going to want that from your outside receiver, not your big slot receiver. And, you know, in the meantime, they've had DJ Moore line up inside on 37% of his snaps. And then the other stuff is like Shai Smith and Laviska Shenault or whatever. But that's great for DJ Moore. And it's good for Terrace Marshall. So I've definitely bagged on Marshall a lot, although I liked him coming into the NFL, but it's just his rookie season was so bad. But the usage there is pretty decent.
Yeah, hard to argue with the usage. And again, he's like, you don't need to mess around with Terrace Marshall in a 12-team league, matter where the targets are. Like, there's not a lot of upside to the offense. Feels like there is coming off this past week, but I feel like that's probably a mirage.
This is just for you sickos out there in the crazy leagues. And I'm in a lot of those, so I'm going to be like, okay, Terrace Marshall. All right, let's move on to quarterback here. I mean, there's only one real luminary here, and it's your boy, Justin Fields.
Yeah, there is one right answer if he happens to be available on the waiver wire this week, and it's Justin Fields. Plenty of problems associated with the Bears offense, no question about it. It's like it's I don't know. We've called Rondale Moore a fake receiver. This is kind of a fake receiving core generally. It is a bunch of cast-offs. It's a bunch of guys that have worn out their welcomes elsewhere. There's not a ton of talent here. Darnell Mooney is fun. He's fine. He should probably not be any team's number one receiver. That's an issue. The offensive line, the pass blocking, also an issue. I mean, there have been plenty of times this season where I don't think any quarter, like the O-line was just caved in immediately at the snap of the football. And I don't think there's a quarterback in the game that wouldn't have been sacked. But Justin Fields, right? I'm just getting all the bad stuff out of the way at the top. Justin Fields,
you're exercising right now, your own demons, and that's perfectly fine.
I really am. This is kind of amazing to me. Like, Fields is the most sacked quarterback in the NFL, and he doesn't have a game with more than 27 pass attempts. Like, he's not even dropping back very often, and he leads the NFL in sacks. That is pretty wild to me. So plenty of issues here, but the good stuff. The guy, if he just stays healthy, is going to run for 900 yards. Like, that's the pace he's on. You can't screw that up from a fantasy perspective. Like, he is a gifted runner. They're designing runs for him now, which is really exciting. Like, there are many more opportunities. And this is as bad as the pass blocking has been, the run blocking has been pretty good. We've got the Bears are supporting two viable starters at running back right now, fringy starters, but starters. Mm-hmm. And Justin Fields has been fantastic. Like, you know, he's piling up like 80 yard rushing efforts, 60 yards this past week. And he's not doing a ton as a passer. Again, he doesn't have a lot to work with, but he's given you a touchdown every week. The volume has come up a little bit from, like, you know, at start of the season, they were basically throwing at the rate that a team might have thrown in like 1975. And now they're at least up to like 1988, 1986, somewhere in there, right? Like, it's a little bit better. It's maybe 20 plus pass attempts per game. That's something. And Fields has just looked really good. So he's like a top five, top six fantasy quarterback if we go back 5 weeks. So the recent results have been very good. And then he's got Miami coming up. Generous defense that just gave up a zillion points to Detroit. And then he's got Detroit, another generous defense. And then he's got Atlanta, which is just a comically bad pass defense. So a layup line of opponents, and he's been playing really well. So I think he is very different from any other quarterback who is likely to be out there on the wire.
You know, it's interesting that Darnell Mooney, after the game, talked about the toughness of Justin Fields. He said, quote, "He's got to stop taking hits. I love him. He's a tough guy, but I don't need him to be a tough guy anymore. Just get out of bounds or something, because we're going to need him." Yeah. It's like, I mean, yeah, for sure, dude, but he definitely has to keep running. Like, he has to get a little bit better about not getting crushed, but which is a skill. You know, guys like Kyler Murray, you know, who does get hurt, but like, he rarely ever takes like a obliterating hit. You know, Lamar Jackson really
just absolutely never gets crushed. Yeah,
but yeah, he's like, he's got to keep running. So it is a little interesting there. Your other guys on the list, not nearly as exciting as Justin.
Yeah, and the only other two names on the list are just for, you know, Fields, I think, is 40% rostered right now. So if he's gone in your league, and he's going to be gone in many leagues, Marcus Mariota, can I interest you in Marcus Mariota? He's coming off an okay day, 253 yards, three touchdowns. Probably not going to have a whole lot of those, because the prior week, you'll remember, in a game in which they were never really competitive, he only threw the ball 13 times. So they hide him a lot. But he's got a little bit of rushing upside, 43 rushing yards this past week, and we've seen better efforts than that. So Mariota, interesting. He's going to play the Chargers. Not a great defense. A terrible run defense. Kind of a middling pass defense. So he's a reasonable spot starter if he can't get Fields. And also, like, kind of shout out to Andy Dalton here. It's not always pretty, but he's got six passing touchdowns in his last two games. And he doesn't even have Michael Thomas or Jarvis Landry. Like, the receiving core there isn't anything special, but he's at least feeding Alvin Kamara, right? That's good to see, because Kamara last year and then the early part of this year was just not getting peppered with targets the way he had been with Drew Brees. And Andy Dalton has kind of fixed that problem. So that's good to see. Again, Olave's great. We've talked about Olave several times. So he's got some weapons. He knows how to use them. Yes, he's going to turn the ball over a few times, but that's not usually, the penalties for that in fantasy, as James Coe would probably tell you, are not severe.
not severe enough. You figure that out in the fourth, though, this offseason.
Yeah, exactly right. We're gonna have the flashlights under there. We're gonna be like scribbling on the legal pad together. It's gonna be great. Can't wait for it. And he's got a friendly matchup coming up with the Ravens. They rank 28th against the pass, so it should be another decent week for Andy Dalton.
All right, let's move to tight end, where you give us your weekly Evan Engram propaganda.
I have real enthusiasm for tight ends this week. Like, it was kind of fake enthusiasm for the wide receivers. I don't know that I'm going to be placing big bids there. But I have real enthusiasm for these tight ends. Like, I'm quite happy that Evan Engram found the end zone, because that guy has seen a ton of targets. And there's just not that many tight ends out there that are being fed, right? Like, most of these guys outside of Andrews, Kelsey, and Joku when he was healthy, you know, totally touchdown dependent. And it's not like Engram is tied to a fully finished, you know, elite quarterback or anything like that. But man, that guy's seen 29 targets in his last four games, which is great to see. There's just not that many tight ends who are seeing 7 targets per game. That's where he's at. He's got the Raiders coming up. They are among the most generous defenses to opposing tight ends, if you care about things like that. And he finally found the end zone this past week, so that was good to see as well. I would imagine that Evan Engram can finish this season with like 5 or 6 touchdowns. That would not be a surprise to me. There was a lot of buzz throughout camp, throughout the preseason, about the connection that he had with Lawrence, and Lawrence is seeking him out pretty regularly. Like, you should expect 6 to 10 targets a week from Evan Engram. That's what he's been doing. So it was great to see him finally find the end zone. Like, he's a thing. He's going to finish as a top 10 fantasy tight end this season. And we mentioned Isaiah Likely earlier. I got to believe he's, again, behind Mark Andrews. He looks quite often like he might be the second most dangerous receiver on that team when Rashad Bateman isn't on the field. He was just fantastic against Tampa. I don't want to downplay it. 6 catches, 77 yards,
yeah, so good.
Touchdown, huge touchdown. Baltimore is just totally running out of healthy skill players. So I can't imagine that they want, even with Mark Andrews presumably returning, I can't imagine that Isaiah Likely isn't going to have a pretty significant role against the Saints. So I'm excited about him. Greg Dulcich, a guy that you've talked about extensively, another fine game for him. It was weird because he finished with 87 yards against the Jaguars. I feel like almost all of it was on one drive, and he didn't do a whole lot outside of that. But the prior week, 9 targets. The week before that, a touchdown. He's rarely coming off the field. Like, he's clearly the dominant tight end for Denver right now. Can't play him this week because they're on bye. But once he comes back, I think he's probably somebody that I'm going to be ranking within the top 10, 12 tight ends rest of season. Final name I feel like we have to talk about, and he shares the Zach Wilson problem, is Tyler Conklin, because he just saw 10 targets, caught a couple of touchdowns. There was some buzz during the summer about the Conklin Wilson magic. I don't want to tie myself to Zach Wilson, but I feel like I have to mention him. Again, Conklin has the problem that Garrett Wilson does, which is that it's Buffalo coming up and then it's a bye. So I don't know. Do you really want to? You're not going to use him in 2 weeks, and I'm not sure you want to use him against Buffalo. So that seems a little dicey.
It definitely seems dicey because of that reason. But yeah, he's worth mentioning. And, you know, if they're going to ice their best receiver, or one of their two best receivers, I guess that their tight end, their veteran tight end, you know, will get super involved in the offense. Although they obviously don't want to be passing as much as they had to pass against New England, because they clearly want to take the ball out of Zach Wilson's hands. But speaking of that, let's move on to our drops here, Andy. I'll get us started because I just mentioned Elijah Moore. Like, if Elijah Moore is not traded, and I still don't think he's going to get traded, you can go ahead and just drop him. Like, and he's still about 40% rostered, something like that. I love Elijah Moore, believe in the player, but he's not playing, you know, it's as simple as that. Like, you can't roster guys because you're not even stashing at that point. Like, oh, what if Zach Wilson just magically gets better, this connection, which, as he said, I don't know anything about that. I don't get the ball. You know, you can't do that, right? Like, so you can just keep moving Elijah Moore. Like, if he doesn't get traded, you know, if he's not on the Ravens, if he's not on the Packers, or he's not on literally any other team in the NFL, by the time the trade line goes, you can just go ahead and drop Elijah Moore. And it sucks. By the way, it also sucks that, wow, Denzel Mims is finally playing right now. It's like, oh yeah, but they had to put another guy in the hole to make that happen.
Yeah, this is brutal. I've got 4 leagues in which I'm about to drop Elijah Moore. I've, you know, he's the drop on a whole bunch of waiver claims this week. And I've just, You got to throw in the towel at some point because you can't trade him. You can't start him. There's six teams on bye. Everybody's got a bunch of holes to fill this week, and nobody wants to fill them with Elijah Moore. The whole situation just sucks. We can hope for a trade, but he's exactly the sort of player that the Jets should be holding right now. So I doubt we'll see it. It's just a weird situation. It doesn't reflect well on him that it's come to this, right? And that he's been public with his displeasure. But I do understand his displeasure.
Yeah, I understand the frustration, but probably should have just kept that in house. Like, I think that's probably the best thing that could have done from it. I'll give you one more drop just in case Elijah Moore is traded. Robert Woods, 59% of you people out there are holding on to Robert Woods. Enough already, okay? Stop. Like, I mean, we can just talk. I'm going to talk about this every single week until this podcast ends, until the damn season ends, or you people get your stuff together. And Robert Woods is not on 59% of the rosters on Yahoo right now. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's really wild. And I feel like maybe we're at a point where a lot of those rosters are just like deadbeat teams where it just hasn't gone well because they're, you know, you're the team that drafted Robert Woods. It hasn't worked out. Yeah. And you probably walked away at some point in the middle of October and he's just going to sit there and his roster percentage is going to be annoyingly high for the rest of the season. My guy here, and I wholeheartedly endorse both of your drops. My guy here is Chase Edmonds, who we may have talked about in this segment before, but he's another one where he's still 56% rostered. Like the snap counts, the yardage totals consistently in the teens, like week in and week out, he is playing like 15 snaps and giving you 16 yards. And there were a couple of magic moments weeks ago when he was mysteriously getting the ball at the goal line and then barely playing the rest of the game. And so there was a little bit of, you know, sort of touchdown deodorant to his day, but it's not happening anymore. He is no kind of answer for your fantasy team. He's barely relevant to the Dolphins right now. He doesn't, you know, we've seen what it looks like. They tried to feed him in the early weeks of the season and it wasn't great. So like, he doesn't really have contingent value. I'm sure this is another case where there's just a lot of deadbeat teams that aren't going to drop Chase Edmonds because they've walked away. But anybody who's still clinging to the idea that Chase Edmonds could have value in December, I don't know. That seems highly unlikely.
The best way to put it is that I have no confidence that even if Raheem Mostert went down, that he would be like the direct replacement. Like they might get Miles, any of these other goofballs involved or whatever. So yeah, not a lot of enthusiasm there. Let's move on to Hold On Loosely. You've got Drake London, who I'm pretty sure was mine last week. So that's where we're at with Drake London.
Yeah. And I just wanted to mention him because this is another guy that I've got, you know, I'm not sure if I actually have him in leagues with Elijah Moore, but I'm like, I'm real close to dropping him. You can't start him even in a rare week when Marcus Mariota was passing the ball a bunch. It was a pretty quiet week for Drake London. So like 5-6 targets didn't really do him any good. I'm going to give him another shot against the Chargers. There are some leagues where I'm going to have to play him because again, six teams on bye, we've all got problems this week. But it hasn't been good. He's basically producing these Kyle Pitts like lines without, you know, the real spike week. So it's very close. We know that this is a team that their ideal game script is we throw the ball, you know, 16 times and we run the ball 35 times and we squeak out a win. So there's not a lot of upside to the passing game generally. I don't have a lot of hope, even if they do make a quarterback change. I don't have a lot of hope that any of this changes. So it's really tough. I'm going to give him one more week because it's so messy out there. But then that's it. If I don't get a little something, if we have good signs of life this week, I'm going to have to move on in everything but dynasty leagues.
Yeah, the future is so bright for Drake London and Kyle Pitts too, because I'm still going to say this, like this offense is really well designed and like they have plays where they do scheme things up for Kyle Pitts and they scheme things up for Drake London. It's just their quarterback is Marcus Mariota, bro. And like, I thought Robert Mays on the Athletic podcast made a good point this on their recap show. I listened to it this morning that like, it is funny that we're all sitting here like Kyle Pitts needs to be more involved. You know, Drake London needs to be more involved. They need to throw the ball more. They threw the ball so much last year and they were the worst offense in the NFL. And like this year, they're actually pretty good offense. So I know it's a problem for fantasy, but like the future is really bright for these two players. But, you know, it just is what it is right now for the way it's going to go with these guys. Like again, Marcus Mariota is our quarterback. Come on, give me a break. My guy is Wandale Robinson, who's rostered in 52% of leagues. Really disappointing result. last week, but all the peripherals are still there. You know, that was just a game where, you know, I'll give a lot of credit to the Seahawks defense, where we talked about them, you know, with Scott on the recap show. Like, I think that defense is sort of kind of coming around. I think some of the guys, the younger guys, are playing well. Like, we got to sort of adjust our priors that they're not just like a total deadbeat defense. But Wandale Robinson, 84.6% routes per dropback. You know, he was 84% slot receiver. Like, he has the role that we want. Again, the results just weren't there, but I would still keep him around as a potential like wide receiver fill in for the bye weeks.
Yeah, no, it's a really good call. Electric player. And the playing time was just fine. It was more than anything, I think it was a reminder of what the floor is for any receiver tied to that offense. And it's nothing, right? Like, any of the, like any of those guys, you know, somebody might get traded there, could be a star. Their floor in any given week is going to be nothing. Like, it's not a, you know, that's life with Daniel Jones and a Saquon focused offense.
Yeah. The great way to say it is that the floor is just, it doesn't exist in this particular league, or this, on this particular team. Getting in early, Andy, I've got two guys from, Nico Collins didn't play in it, but like, if you watch that Texans and Titans game and thought, like, I got to get pieces of this for fantasy, I got a guy from a Texans and I got a guy on the Titans. Nico Collins, you know, didn't play last week. I don't know when he's going to come back, but you know, there's all these rumors about Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks has been, you know, like, we'll see, maybe he doesn't get traded, but I still don't think he's like a feature point of this offense at this point anymore. Nico Collins was playing really well before that injury, 15% rostered. I would get him, and even if he doesn't play this week, I just stick him on the bench, and I think he's got a good shot to get a little bit better as the season goes on. And Dontrell Hilliard, like, he, I think, might fit into the stash running back group, even if he's like, maybe it's Hassan Haskins gets in there and is like a banger back for Derrick Henry, if God forbid ever Derrick Henry ever got hurt. But Hilliard at least has some, like, what the heck, super, super what the heck flex appeal. And also, obviously, as a stash guy as well.
Yeah, my guy here, and I'm not, listen, the only reason I'm going to talk about Jaylen Warren is that I keep talking about Rashad White. And I don't know how many weeks in a row am I going to talk about the same guy as a getting in early. But Jaylen Warren at least shows signs of life. And it is bad for Najee Harris right now. Like, he is about as inefficient as a starting running back can be. Again, I feel like we've discussed him a few times. I hope that the issue is just like a lingering foot thing, and he's going to be a different player next year, because it's been bad. And it's also one of those situations where, with, you know, he's got that super patient style, right? A little bit of dancing behind the line of scrimmage. And when holes just don't open, that is a terrible look, and it leads to terrible results. And so Najee has been one of the least efficient players in terms of per touch effectiveness this entire season. It's not getting any better. Coming off a really rough week against a good Philadelphia defense, Warren was pretty lively. And Warren at least just gets north and south, right? Like, he'll just get the yards that are there. I don't know that he's a super inventive player necessarily, but the yards that are blocked, he will get for you. And that has not always been the case with Najee this year. So I feel like, you know, this hasn't been a version of the Pittsburgh offense where Najee is just on the field 90% of the time like he was for so much of last season. And I think as the year goes on, just based on his disappointing production, we're going to see a little bit more Warren. And of course, if anything were to happen to Najee, then Warren would fall into a pretty significant workload. And I don't think he would screw that up. I think he'd be a pretty interesting player.
I can't talk about Steelers offense anymore because it's the worst. It's the worst designed offense in the NFL.
It's blindingly bad, yeah.
It's blindingly bad, and you can tell who watches film and who doesn't based on how they talk about the Steelers offense or any of the players involved in it, and I'll just say that. I'll leave it there. All right, let's end the podcast here with our update on the Treviso Babes League. My mom is playing fantasy football for the first time ever. If you've missed it, it's a wild league. But I'll say this, Andy. There are very, very few crazy drops at this point anymore. Honestly, the drops have calmed down. I mean, you know, I'm looking at the most recent ones. Your boy Evan Ingram was dropped, but like, you know,
outrageous. Okay, whatever.
Jacoby Brissett, Hayden Hurst, Josh Reynolds, you know, the normal names that are getting dropped to fantasy leagues. Damian Harris, a little fringy there, but we did have one crazy drop leading into last week. It's a, I'll give you a hint. It's a kind of young, definitely star wide receiver.
Oh, well, that sounds like Velus Jones. He's kind of young.
this guy might be the same age as Velus Jones. So
So kind of young and definitely a star. Oh, that's a tough one. It can't be like somebody from the Gabe Davis range, but it's not Gabe Davis.
This player is, by the way, younger than Velus Jones, but was drafted quite a much longer ago than rookie Velus Jones is.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around.
Second contract receiver. Let's put it that way.
Oh, gosh. Wow. And second contract receiver who's younger than Velus Jones. That's hilarious.
Well,
is it Juju's not actually younger than Velus Jones, is he? They're like the same age. I don't know.
Lord Podcast on the side guest Mike Williams. It's not Mike Williams is not younger than Velus Jones. It's also not Mike Williams. Juju also is 25. He'll turn 26 in November.
Is it DJ Moore?
He's about the same age, by the way. Juju, Velus Jones. They're both 25 years old. Although, geez, Juju will be 26 before, obviously. It's DK Metcalf, by the way. It's the answer.
Okay. I almost forgive this because it certainly, you know, if they happen to be watching when that injury happened, it looked like it was going to be a significant injury, right? He was carted, and then we all had the DK Metcalf poop cart jokes, and then it seemed like it was going to be something pretty serious. Felt miraculous that he was actually able to play in week 8. And then, of course, he goes out and scores a touchdown. So I kind of get why this happened. Like, if you were preparing yourself for like a 4-week absence from DK Metcalf, justifiable
It was a Thursday drop, and based on the I'm looking who was added. This is just hilarious that this was who was added. They added Julio Ginny's crazy team. This is my mom's good friend Leslie. I know Leslie. I'm familiar with her. She dropped DK Metcalf and added Julio Jones. So you know, Thursday at that point it was like,
wow.
Yeah. Hey, Julio Jones got a touchdown though. So if Leslie needed like an emergency start, and Leslie's team is good too, by the way. She's kind of crushing this league right now. So shout out to Leslie for that one. But yeah, DK Metcalf dropped for Julio Jones. Maybe Leslie listened to the podcast and was like, yeah, those boys are right. You can't trust anything Pete Carroll says about a damn injury. Let me just go ahead and drop this guy.
I would have expected this from Ginny, but I'm shocked that Leslie did this.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely, you know, this was a Ginny move. This was certainly a Tammy move.
So Ginny.
Tammy. By the way, Tammy really wants the record corrected about her Antonio Brown ad, which who's no longer on her roster. But you know,
I mean, it happened.
It still happened. We can't just forget that. We can't just forgive that. That is a thing that happened. Okay. So yeah, this league's getting interesting, man. You know, my mom needs a real slow Joe Mixon game tonight in order to win and go to 5-3. So we'll see what happens. But that is gonna do it for us. You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andy Behrens if you don't already. If you don't already, I mean, come on, what are you doing? You follow Yahoo stuff and you don't follow Andy Behrens? Give me a break. You can follow me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, make yourself a better fantasy player and improve your timeline by following at Yahoo Fantasy. You will not regret it. That's a guarantee. Austin Eckler, ever heard of him, will be back off his bye week tomorrow, and we'll find out what's going on with him on a new episode of Eckler's Edge. Until then, we're out.